Hi, this is Michelle Sherman, president of MissureX Pharmacist Consulting Services and the host of the Conscious Pharmacist podcast. As far back as I can remember growing up in South Africa, one thing was always obvious to me. It was something that emanated from my soul, if you will. It was the knowing that all human beings are created equal, that we are all the same. The Conscious Pharmacist podcast is proud to be a podcast on the Pharmacy Podcast Network and is a show for pharmacist healthcare providers who have answered the call to practice on purpose. Being conscious brings to light disparities and injustices in our society and healthcare system. Our show strives to bring to the forefront these issues we face today in a changing healthcare landscape and how we can change lives one patient at a time. As pharmacists, we do what matters, how we practice what matters, and how we take care of patients matters. Be conscious. Speak out. Every voice matters. Be the change you wish to see in the world.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. You're listening to the CRX Podcast. The CRX Podcast provides an added benefit for healthcare professionals and readers of the CRX Magazine, a leader in reliable information and news about medical cannabis. The CRX Podcast will provide the latest discussions about cannabinoid products as part of a patient's treatment plans and deliver the latest education about medical cannabis for pharmacists, physicians, and innovative healthcare providers.
Hello, welcome to the CRX Podcast. This is Joseph Friedman, pharmacist with CRX Magazine. And what we try to do is do podcasts based on past and future articles in the magazine. Today, I'm very excited to have two very special guests today, and we're going to be discussing a topic that's near and dear to everyone, has affected everyone on this planet, and that has to do with COVID. So this is cannabis and COVID. And so I've got two experts with me today, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves because they can do a much better job than I can. So Jason, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Joe. Great to be here. So Jason Nelson, Senior Vice President of Horticulture with Cresco Labs. I've been in regulated cannabis for over 9 years, previously in Denver, and now working with Cresco Labs as the multi-state operator. I'm fortunate to have moved my position into a horticultural focus with a lens certainly towards cannabis research, educational institution empowerment. It's been a great experience to be able to try to understand where we are with cannabis research and then hopefully move into supporting next steps. But again, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And Marion, go ahead.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me here as well. My name is Dr. Marion McNabb, and I'm the president of Cannabis Center of Excellence. We're a 501c3 nonprofit cannabis research, education, and social justice organization based out of Massachusetts. I've been in the industry for 5 years, conducting now 6 research studies related to cannabis on the medical cannabis side and the adult use side. And most recently, am in the process of completing a COVID-19 and cannabis research study that was conducted over the last year with UMass Dartmouth and in collaboration with partners such as Cresco Labs. So thank you so much for having me here today.
Great. Well, I think the idea of research on how cannabis can help with COVID is definitely near and dear to everyone's heart. So let's just go ahead and get started. I think, you know, we're going to ask a number of questions and then we'll go back and forth. But, from the start of the pandemic, rumors began swirling about the potential role of cannabis in the treatment or prevention of COVID-19. Jason, can you talk about some of the misinformation and the credible information that has since circulated?
Sure. I can certainly do my best. And I know that we constantly preface this circumstance about just the overall limitations in effective cannabis research. I know, Marin certainly laments how difficult it can be to actually, conduct or even evaluate reasonable studies. But, certainly the misinformation that's common in the space and we're guilty of being charged of it too is, considering cannabis as an end-all be-all curative that, of course it can help COVID. Why are we not, prescribing it constantly for COVID-19 symptoms? symptoms. And so ultimately, you know, that general misnomer about cannabis really does need the research to prove or certainly indicate what may be some true therapeutic beneficial outcomes from cannabis consumption. You know, on the credible information side, there certainly has been some publications recently on the increase of cannabis use as a response to isolation in the pandemic. You know, some of the more data-driven studies that don't actually have to have a research institution physically touch a cannabis product. And so it has been both sides of things. And I think it basically, in my mind, indicates the potential of how future research needs to be conducted.
And speaking of future research, Marion, you had mentioned that you're doing some of this research. I think there has been past research. I'm not sure how credible or quality it is, but why don't you go ahead and touch on that?
Yeah, thank you. So I think there is a lot of research studies going on out there. The study that I've conducted is a population level self-report research study that asks cannabis consumers and patients the impact of COVID-19 on their use and their health and their choices and access related to cannabis. So my study, in addition to other population level researchers such as Denise Vito at University of Miami, present data from that perspective. And echoing what Jason just said, we did find an increase in 50% of our sample reporting an increase in cannabis use during the pandemic, and that primarily driven by an increase in anxiety, life changes, depression, et cetera. But we do see that there are, and that's credible, in my opinion, we're approved by a university institutional review board, and this is straight from the horse's mouth. But again, there is that self-report bias. There are other research trials going on in the world. There's a lot of in vitro studies looking at CBD and THC as possible prevention and treatment alternatives. There's clinical studies happening in Israel. But as we see in general in cannabis research, there's a polar side to the fence. NIDA has also issued a grant to study the negative impacts of cannabis smoking and COVID relations. So as usual, there's a lot of contentious level in the research and in the literature, and it's always important to check out who funds the research and how large those trials are and whether or not they're registered ongoing. Well, so happy to dig more into it.
Well, that's a great point. And Jason, I know you were involved with putting together a white paper on cannabis and COVID. And so maybe for our audience, you know, how can cannabis prevent COVID or at least showing signs that it should be studied?
Well, I think, you know, from a correlative type perspective, or essentially an anecdotal perspective, that's the real trick, right? Is, thankfully there was some research done on the previous SARS outbreak. Again, not direct human clinical trials, certainly not with a robust amount of results that offer comparisons across different populations or consumption methods. I mean, the stuff that would really be truly impactful to understand is still just lacking. But, you know, when you take a look at the body of research and then align that with cannabis constituents, there has been quite a bit of research on terpenes, obviously a common constituent of many cannabis products, because those are less regulated, certainly, than Delta-9 THC. And you do. You'll find publications that show antiviral properties, antiviral replication properties of specific terpenes and terpenoids. And then likewise, as Dr. McNabb mentioned, certainly CBD as a cannabinoid being less scrutinized has had a little more traction and the ability to serve as a clinical research subject. And so, you know, I think the amalgam of all the information that we were able to track down for that white paper just really indicates there could be some really fundamental principles of cannabinoid interaction with the endocannabinoid system that, yes, by all rights and by all assumptions, should have efficacy against the COVID-19 variant of the virus.
Right. Well, there's been one study, and, I've got this study in front of me. But the bottom line is that, CBD has a potential not only to act as an antiviral agent at the early stages of infection, but also protect the host against overactive immune system at later stages. And so, basically this article went through the idea that CBD is really a key component. So, Marion, what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, I read that paper too, and I find it to be very interesting and compelling. I think there are some other studies out there that are also looking at the impact of THC, and there's some clinical trials out there that are looking at CBD, you're right, as an antiviral, but also to have an impact on acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is at the later stages of COVID-19. So both from a prevention of COVID actually infecting the human host, there's some studies looking at that, again, in animal models or in vitro 3D animal models. And then again, also at that treatment level. But I think what's interesting and important is that we shouldn't really focus on individual isolated cannabinoids, but really try and understand the role of different cannabinoids in combination and what that might do, because different cannabinoids, you know, we're finding have different levels of impact, and there's a biphasic approach to cannabis medicine. So we really need to be careful about which cannabinoids, the combination of them, and if they're actually having a hyper, you know, reduced immune response and therefore impacting negatively our immune system and somebody who's infected with COVID. So I think, you know, what we're going to see is more and more human trials coming out of other countries, Israel and Canada. I did note some clinical trials that were registered in the US as well with different cannabinoids. I think to your point, Jason, CBD has a lot more potential because, you know, at least on the hemp-based side, it's regulated quite differently. So therefore, it could be studied differently. One thing I also want to point out is the long-haul COVID symptoms. Now that people have been infected, you know, where are we looking at the research of those long-term impacts as well? And I think not only during prevention and acute treatment, but what are we doing to impact those ongoing symptoms?
Well, that's interesting. And, you know, I think the idea, you know, of our listeners here is a lot of them have probably heard of cytokine storms, but, you know, what is behind, you know, cannabis and possible prevention of the cytokine storms, Jason, that you can explain and then make it make more sense?
Sure. And I'll take, you know, the non-medical science understanding. And I know Dr. McNabb can certainly supplement a little bit. But, you know, the cytokine storm, essentially from my perspective, is just an inflammatory response within your respiratory system as a response to the viral infection and replication. And so, you know, with respect to that cytokine storm, then it really would be the discovery process to really understand what the interaction of cannabinoids in the presence of that circumstance, whether it can reduce inflammation, if it could outright halt that type of response and have impact on it. And to Dr. McNabb's point, you know, which particular cannabinoids might have the most efficacy alongside potential terpenoids or other compounds that are being consumed on a regular basis in a whole plant cannabis product. But again, to Dr. McNabb's point, really trying to wrap our heads around, you know, what's going on a biological standpoint with not only specific cannabinoids, but obviously the entourage effect. That's a very difficult prospect. You certainly have a large discipline of medical professionals who aren't comfortable or as comfortable studying an entourage, a holistic type effect compared to a single constituent with a single experimental outcome and publishing those results. And so, you know, you're right. We certainly understand that the cytokine storm is one of the most deleterious outcomes of the viral infection, and that with the potential of cannabis to, you know, either preempt that infection by occupying those protein receptors or ultimately just mitigate the impacts and reduce the severity of that cytokine storm, I certainly see the potential for effective research there.
So let me just kind of interject. So real world situation, someone's admitted to the hospital, they're having problems breathing, they go downhill very quickly, and they're about to be put on a respirator. I mean, would the doctor ever consider cannabinoids for this oncoming cytokine storm?
I would say right now, no. The doctor would not prescribe because that's not been approved or legally available through, you know, an FDA approved context. But they are studying the potential for that. And to build upon what Jason was saying, You know, we have an endocannabinoid system that plays a key role in our immune system and regulating that immune system in several pathways that mediate the release of cytokines and the cytokine storm. And so different cannabinoid receptors within our endocannabinoid system play a role in not only COVID-19 infection, but other immune-related disorders, and interestingly in HIV and AIDS, late stage of HIV. A disease and illness that I used to study quite significantly. And, you know, the different neurological manifestations and pathways that these phytocannabinoids interact with, I think, are very important to understand the ways that it reduces the cytokine storm at the time of acute distress. So it's, you know, you're admitted to a hospital, you can't breathe. And when they're diagnosing you with ARDS at this point, that's when they're saying that these cannabinoids can interfere in those neural pathways and impact your immune system and the cytokine response to reduce it to a level that would not cause the mortality. So I think right now, this is the treatment is definitely being studied in Israel as in different phased clinical trials, and like we said, in different cannabinoid combinations or as individual isolates. So I think, you know, right along all these studies, I think we really need to be, looking at this impact, at what would be the dose response, what is the safety profile. Right now, what's the current safety profile of the treatments that are out there at that late stage in ARDS? And what is the safety profile of cannabis, which has never necessarily had a lethal death associated with it, but may obviously have impacts on the way that different, immune responses play out. We need to be very, very careful of that. So, I think right now the current recommendation is looking at, there's definitely evidence looking at other symptoms and the impact of cannabis on those symptoms, such as depression or PTSD and other long haul symptoms. And, we really need to gather the research that's out there right now, looking at the impact in these in vitro studies of cannabis on acute respiratory distress syndrome, and kind of move it towards where we can do this as emergency clinical trials in the U.S.
And, what's interesting, at the beginning of the pandemic, CRX had an article, the editor actually put in a forward to an article on how, at the beginning, cannabis dispensaries were not considered essential, but people were lining up just to, get, and they didn't want people lining up, around the block, without masks on. And so they made them essential, but they were all getting in line for a lot of the long haul symptoms, or the symptoms that, have come about because of the pandemic and people feeling anxiety and depression and so forth. And another thing that you said, Marian, that I think is very important is, we don't understand really what the dose is. So there's a lot of places you can walk into a Walmart or a CVS and pick up CBD tincture. That's not necessarily going to give you the dose that you need in order to address ARDS or cytokine storms or things like that. So with that, So on the flip side, can you, Jason, can you discuss the increased risk cannabis smokers may have on lung damage and complications from COVID-19? Is there a safer route of administration that would be more beneficial?
Yeah, and I think, anybody approaching this from a clinical perspective, is kind of stuck with this paradox that yes, 100% would be considered more pharmacologically oriented consumption methods. Certainly something like a inhaler, a vaporized mist, even an electronic cigarette. You could certainly probably make the case that that's a more consistent dosing event. A lot of these new electronic cigarettes do actually give you a consistent dose versus patient A might inhale on something for 2 seconds and patient B might inhale on something for 5 seconds. So there are certainly various mechanisms of dosing that can be extremely consistent, could be studied alongside a clinical placebo, i.e. a similar type mechanism, but with absent the cannabinoids of focus. And, I think that the thing that we struggle with is certainly understanding that raw flower, which is most commonly consumed as a smoking product, is the most ubiquitously, most equitably available product. product across the entire country. That being said, a good portion of that country still accesses it through an illicit market, which is not a circumstance that any of us are in favor of. But when it comes to really understanding how we can leverage the potential benefit from cannabis, yes, one understands that companies like Cresco Labs have multiple types of products that would fit very well into a clinical trial structure with the placebo alongside of it. And that too, we do really need researchers and clinicians to start wrapping their heads around some comfortability with studying whole cannabis flower consumption as an event, and then also alternative methods for whole flower consumption as well, something as a vaporizer versus rolling up a pre-roll or a joint and actually combusting it. So it's a unique circumstance to try to understand, here's how cannabis is available, but if we actually had some more research leeway, yes, any of these clinical style products could easily be manifested.
Great. Well, you know, Marian, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think from COVID and its increased risk with cannabis consumers we see and patients, I think we definitely see that, you know, clinical guidance will steer patients away really from inhalation, especially if you're, you know, have damaged lungs. We do see in the research study that I led, 14% of our sample actually switched methods due to COVID. And it's echoed actually in Dr. Vito's study at the University of Miami, who reported 16% of her sample also changed methods of ingestion of cannabis since COVID started. So people are mindful of this. People are switching. And I would say, you know, switching to things more that are like edibles or tinctures. You know, I think with the recent unfortunate vape crisis as well, you know, consumers and patients are wary and should be purchasing these products from regulated sources, to reiterate on Jason's point. But I would say, you know, cannabis patients in both my study as well as Dr. Vito's study are significantly reporting that they're increasing their cannabis use because of COVID. So while they maybe shouldn't be smoking flower because of decreased use, if you are a medical patient and you are taking all those safe precautions that we've all been warned about, the mask, stay-at-home orders, and you have underlying health conditions that you have been benefiting from medical cannabis from, you know, where's the discussion around, well, if you're taking those safe measures and precautions and not exposing yourself, you know, are you still putting yourself at that same level of risk? And vis-a-vis what you might be, your health may be worsening because you are reducing your use of medical cannabis use. And we see that in the data in my study where, you know, some have, actually because they have not been able to access medical cannabis, their health has worsened. But, you know, another, you know, kind of flip side of all of this is one of the data points that we do see is that with the increase in cannabis use, many in our study are reporting that they're using that to substitute more lethal substances and harmful substances such as alcohol and tobacco use, as well as unwanted prescription or over-the-counter medications. So in our sample, 54% of people are struggling to use medical cannabis as a replacement or unwanted prescription or over-the-counter medications for their primary health conditions. So it's complicated, I guess, to complicate things more. You know, there is an increased risk of cannabis smokers of COVID, but where's the line where we understand what are these patients currently facing and what is their risk profiles, I guess, and what we should be advising. Maybe shouldn't be one size fits all for each patient, back to that dosing regimen. You know, we know that patients with severe health conditions or cancer consuming FECO, for example, will extract cannabis oil, where others might need, you know, 5 to 10 milligrams of a gummy just for a light sleep disorder. So one size fits all doesn't really work in cannabis medicine. So continue to research and educate and implement is the best approach.
Right. And, you know, and cannabis has also been implicated in preliminary studies in increasing the risk for contracting COVID. You know, some of the information has come directly from prominent oppositionists, one of my favorite topics. But, you know, what is the credibility of this type of information coming from people opposed to cannabis? And in addition, you know, in the CRX magazine, you know, one of the quotes, you know, from an article on this, you know, from one of the researchers said, vaporization of concentrated cannabis, as in vape pens, they may be even worse than smoking for lung health. And then vaping of cannabis or tobacco, they're comparing it to tobacco, which is especially popular with younger Americans, is thought to increase the risk of both contracting COVID and developing more severe complications. So, you know, we're getting, you know, both answers here on whether it's beneficial or whether it's it's a real negative. So Jason, what do you think?
Yeah, and then Dr. McNabb might be able to kind of clarify my context on this. But as I read through those studies, the thing that strikes me is the general association between cannabis and certainly other mind-altering drugs is a lot of times the way that they phrase their research focus. And as I'm reading through these, there certainly are areas of legitimate concern that speak to more, I believe, an individual patient's or a population demographic's lifestyle choices, with how they may lead their lives otherwise, with other treatments they may be seeking, other substances they may be abusing. And so anytime I paint that in that context, yes, those are legitimate risks. And the upside of understanding those risks is then you can obviously begin to tailor research initiatives that preempt those risks with certain warnings about use. And I think the thing I see missing from all of those studies would be any kind of biomedical research of the impact of cannabinoids on the respiratory system once they're inhaled or ingested otherwise. So it's one thing to say that, yes, there are circumstances in which cannabis use can implicate COVID infections at a higher rate, but then there's no supplementary information at this time that says, well, actually, this cannabinoid profile, this terpene profile is so effective at modulating and reducing the impacts from either COVID infection or symptoms upon infection that it may well still be a delta improvement to introduce cannabis treatment into a COVID circumstance. And so my big picture way of thinking about that is certainly understand the legitimacy of those concerns. And at the same time, that lets us indicate what reasonable research and precautions need to be advised upon when someone is considering cannabis as a therapeutic.
Right. And right along those lines, Miriam, are there any other risks associated with using cannabis with respect to COVID that you want to, tell the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely risks, and I think the jury's still out. We need to, like I said, I don't think it's ready for prime time clinical guidance at this stage at all for prevention and treatment. A lot of those studies, to Jason's point, have all been in vitro. We need more human studies, and we also need more biomedical research that's really digging in deep to looking at those cannabinoid levels and our immune response, et cetera. I think, one of the traditional ways that people consume cannabis is in a social environment. I mean, obviously, we've all been limited in the last year and some change around that. And I think consumers are maybe generally aware, but that, in itself and vaping, could also follow that same tradition of people sharing. That can increase, obviously, risk of transmission. Like I said before, cannabis having that sort of reduced immune response and also lower the immune function of our lung function. So having your lungs not be as up to par as usual can put you at a disadvantage. Again, I think it's always really important to understand where these funding sources are and where this data is coming from and continue to advocate for more open and transparent funding resources available for clinicians and providers in the United States to conduct these studies and trials. So right now, a lot of the funding is abroad and/or driven by financial gain. So having broad, publicly available research grants that universities and others can access will really help us understand what these risks are and what the benefits are.
Right. And something that, is very timely is variants of COVID that are now coming out that are keeping this pandemic going very strong. And in particular, the Delta variant, and there could be other variants down the road. So, should we be paying any additional attention to now, a Delta variant versus the variants that we've been, studying and working with in the past? Jason, do you have any comments about that?
You're absolutely right. I think there's certainly precedent for as these viruses proliferate through a population, that the opportunity for variants is real. And I think the two things that strike me, one, we need the research that indicates cannabinoid and constituent efficacy as a mode of action for infection and viral replication that may well supersede the ability of a virus to manifest a change within its mode of action, or at least a subtle change to the point that would certainly or would ultimately then reduce potential efficacy from cannabinoid therapies. And so that I think that research is very timely. And that and the other component that I'll certainly mention with that one, you know, that the vaccine rollout, the ability of pharmaceutical companies to generate an mRNA vaccine with very detailed and focused specificity towards this COVID-19 variation. One, you would certainly hate to have vaccine hesitancy, vaccine intransigency from a large subset of the population implicate the current vaccine, rendering it less effective, and then putting us back to square one. And so I think, you know, for the groups and populations that are hesitant to take a vaccine, we know how important it is for us to advocate to them to please take it. But if for that population, if for some reason a type of cannabinoid therapy, that it's a natural plant medicine, it's been around for millennia, that if that particular mechanism of treatment was effective and could actually help bridge the gap towards a more universally accepted form of controlling the virus, then I think that potential needs to be elucidated quickly, especially in light of, as you said, the Delta variant now seems to be, you know, taking hold as the probable strain that's in most areas now.
Marian, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, Jason, you explained that very eloquently. I think the variants we're finding, obviously, is the, you know, highest prevalence of those newly infected. So advocating for vaccination, as Jason alluded to, is very important. I'd be interested to understand now the role of vaccination and of vaccination and cannabis and different cannabinoids and the impact that may potentially have, because I don't think we've seen much or talked really much about that. So I'd like, you know, that would be really interesting to see. Again, I think also because it's stronger and has a potentially more severe outcomes, there is a role, you know, again, in that acute ARDS. So continuing to research that, continuing to understand that, and moving from animal models of looking at this into human treatment models. Also really understanding, you know, in that Delta variant and those that are infected with that strain, you know, does that change the long-term COVID, you know, long haul symptoms and different conditions that folks are facing? I think I'm going to keep tabs on Canada and Israel and other clinical guidelines and understanding that comes out, you know, and as the vaccine rolls out and as, you know, we're understanding the different populations that are now becoming infected and what those infections look like in the severity, I think we'll have, you know, this will be an ongoing and continuing dialogue.
Yeah. And so if each of you were standing in front of an audience of healthcare providers, which you're doing right now, just not live, you know, what would be, you know, your recommendations regarding, what would you say regarding cannabis use and coronavirus? Jason.
I'm sure, you know, I think to Dr. McNabb's comments that, you know, we understand that there is consequential and pivotal research initiatives, experimentation underway in our neighboring countries, Canada, Israel predominantly, and that ultimately for them as healthcare providers to be ready to leverage the findings of those research initiatives, and albeit in a way that, you know, we certainly understand as researchers within the United States that there's just such a wealth of knowledge and discovery that's poised even within the specific iteration of cannabinoid therapy against a coronavirus that have an open mind. I would certainly advocate to anyone who's still on the fence or even somewhat trepidatious about exploring the subject matters. Like, listen, we're just asking for research allowances, you know, really from a federal perspective for healthcare providers, certainly the institutions that they perhaps work for. You have world-class medical research institutions within the United States that could easily leverage resources if the federal restrictions and illegality associated with a Schedule I substance was refactored, you know, or certainly addressed. So that would be my recommendation. It's to understand what the information is going to be coming out here in the next 6 to 12 months, hopefully, leverage that in the near term. But we all need to be advocating for, listen, if this is a tool in the toolbox, we need to have the clinical trials and human subjects to figure that out and as soon as humanly possible.
That's great. And yeah, kudos to the idea of getting cannabis off of Schedule I, getting it completely descheduled, I think, is the way to go. Marian, what would you say to these healthcare providers?
Yeah, I would say don't feel bad about not knowing so much about medical cannabis and to don't be shy to continue to look at it. That would be the first thing that I would say. Unfortunately, a lot of our healthcare providers and our education system for healthcare providers, physicians, pharmacists, et cetera, lacks the endocannabinoid system, the basics around medical cannabis. So we really need to bring along our medical community to understand where the baseline evidence is for just medical cannabis in general. When it comes to medical cannabis and COVID, again, starting to really ask patients, understand. I've heard anecdotally from doctors that they're quite interested in studying medical cannabis because when their COVID patients have come back in, after they've consumed cannabis, their taste and smell come back. So, you know, some of these things, you know, as we hear from healthcare providers, those are our frontline workers. And those are the frontline workers that can help us identify the trends that are happening and the research that needs to happen and can happen from what they're seeing on the ground. I would also say to the doctor community or, you know, generally the healthcare provider community that cannabis is here and medical cannabis is here. It's really not going anywhere. And it's really important for us to learn how to bridge the gap between, you know, the cannabis industry and the healthcare community, because our patients are left at the chasm in the middle. And we are in not only a COVID pandemic, but we're in an opioid epidemic, we're in a polypharmacy pandemic, and we're also seeing quite significant increases in anxiety, PTSD, and depression among all demographics of our population. So, and some of those conditions like do have benefits for medical cannabis, but we do need to be cautious, such as where the evidence lies now and being cautious about cannabis and COVID. So I think it's definitely, you know, important for us to pay attention to this and to understand, you know, the fact that, you know, medical cannabis was deemed essential. It is a tool in the toolbox, as Jason said, and, you know, putting the research out there and continuing to educate our clinical community is, I think, of utmost importance. I'm really excited to announce we've launched a healthcare provider knowledge, attitudes, and practices study related to medical cannabis last month, together with Medicinal Genomics and UMass Dartmouth. The goal is to actually ask healthcare providers of any profession what they know about medical cannabis, what they don't know, what they want to know, and how they want to learn. And so really trying to engage the clinical community in that reality that, you know, we need to stop, you know, sort of criticizing our healthcare providers for not including it because they've not been educated on it, but really work towards, you know, a collaborative opportunity to bring that education to healthcare providers in a way that's comfortable for them and safe for everybody. And at the right efficacious dose with the right clinical recommendations. So you can follow that study on our website and we'll be producing more information about that as well.
Excellent, Marian. That was fantastic. So we're coming to the end of our podcast. So, you know, I just wanted to ask, Jason, do you have any parting shots? You know, how can people get a hold of you if they have any questions?
Sure, absolutely. And so, you know, yeah, ultimately, it's then thanks, Joe, obviously, to CRX Magazine for the venue to be able to talk about these prospects. And, you know, I think from our big picture perspective, certainly cannabis normalization with direct impact, obviously, on coronavirus infection is of the utmost importance to understand and leverage responsibly. But that just in general, that as Dr. McNabb mentioned, that cannabis, either medical or recreational, it's seemingly not going anywhere anytime soon. And so for all of us to continue to approach the subject matter with a respectful eye for what responsibilities are associated with it, but then too, what the potential for collective benefit in any iteration of cannabis in society. That's, you know, obviously medical research trials, scientific trials, socioeconomic studies with respect to community impact alongside normalization of cannabis. And so it's an exciting time. You know, I'd steer anybody towards the Cresco Labs website to get some more information. And as Dr. McNabb mentioned, certainly, you know, her research initiatives, what they're doing over there on the East Coast are amazing. So certainly check those out as well.
Thank you, Jason. Much appreciated. Dr. McNabb, sorry, I've been calling you Marian this entire time, but I think both probably are okay, right?
Oh, totally. Call me Marian. And thank you. Thank you for having me on this podcast today. It's an honor. And Jason, thanks for the kind words. It's really great to work with y'all. And thank you for the support. The Cannabis Center of Excellence is focused this year, like I said, on raising awareness and engaging the healthcare provider community around medical cannabis. So we've launched this research study. So if companies are interested in partnering and supporting this research, we're actively seeking those. You can find out how to participate on our website, www.cannacenterofexcellence.org. As I said, it's a partnership with UMass Dartmouth, approved by their Institutional Review Board. We have 15 different co-investigators involved, from Dr. Gruber at Harvard, Dr. Grinspoon, to the National Native American Cannabis Association and the National Association for Clinicians of Color in Cannabis. So we're excited about the study this year, and we'll be presenting the results at some really innovative clinical and scientific conferences this year. So our sponsors will have a great opportunity to participate there. Medicinal Genomics runs CanMed, which is now in its, I believe, fourth or fifth year, and we'll be there, our study partner, and we'll be running a workshop at CanMed this year at the end of September, early October, where we'll review some of the research findings and outline some good continuing medical education and healthcare provider education opportunities for the future. We've also partnered with Patients at a Time and their National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics. So we'll be presenting the results there next spring with Mary Lynn Mathur and others at Patients Out of Time. And then the study final results will be presented in CanMed 2022. So we're hoping to get the word out, engage the clinical community around these topics, and continue to drive the field forward. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here today.
Thank you both. This has been fantastic. A lot of great information, cannabis and COVID, very hot topic, both of them. And at the same time, you know, we're going to have additional CRX podcasts in the near future. So stay tuned. This is Joseph Friedman, pharmacist with CRX Magazine and the CRX podcast. We'll see you next time.
To find all the episodes from the CRX podcast, go to crxpodcast.com. To learn more about the latest advancements in medical cannabis, visit crxmag.com. That's crxmag.com. Thanks for listening.